Please welcome Adrian Hall and Mike James.
Good morning, everyone. So can I get a show of hands for those of you who have built an ASP.NET application before? Oh, that's amazing. So you're all Azure experts, and you may not even have known that. So by the end of this session today, you're going to leave here with a solid understanding of how you can reuse that ASP.NET skill that you've got to build mobile application backends in Azure. And I'm going to show you how you can build the mobile front end for iOS, Android, and UWP. I'm going to cover the project structure, so how do I build my mobile apps with Xamarin Forms. I'm going to show you mock data, because whilst Adrian's building the back end, I'm going to be working there, writing the XAML, doing the view models, and I don't want to have to wait for him to get that finished before we can get started, because I love async, so we should be building this asynchronously. Then I'm going to plug in Azure and show you how easy that is. We can do it in just over 100 lines of code and get that offline sync and all the goodness of the SDKs. And then we're going to deploy it to iOS and Android. So over to you, Adrian.
Yeah, I'm going to do the back end whilst you're getting the mock data set up. So my name's Adrian Hall. I work for Azure. And I'm going to be going through a lot of the portal stuff, but I'm also going to be developing an ASP.NET back end for you. Now, a lot of you probably know Azure as a cloud provider, and a lot of people that come out go, yeah, I know cloud. It's virtual machines, it's networking, it's storage. Most of the cloud providers nowadays have an awful lot of platforms, and that's what really separates and allows you to compare the various cloud providers. Azure's no different. It has a lot of features that you can just spin up. The advantage of using the platform services is that you don't have to manage the underlying VMs. We manage the operating system. We manage patching for it. We manage upgrading all the software for you. The one I'm going to be concentrating on today is called Azure App Service. And that's a suite of features that starts with web apps. This allows you to run a web application on Azure just by uploading your ASP.NET code. Again, you don't have to worry about configuring IIS or actually doing any of the underlying operating system changes. We also have a series of SDKs around it. The one I'm going to be concentrating on today is mobile apps, which is an SDK that you can include to give yourself a mobile-capable backend for accessing data, authentication, and push notifications. Now, App Service, we've taken a lot of effort in making sure it's ready for you guys. It is enterprise grade. Now, that to us means very resilient, highly scalable, and has all the features that an enterprise application would need. One of the big ones, for example, is integrating directly into your Active Directory authentication scheme. It's fully managed. You don't have to worry about patching. You don't have to worry about distributed denial of service attacks. Things like that just come for free. And it's built for developers. That means that we're able to link it up and do A/B testing, traffic routing, staging slots, and we work with all the languages that you like to use. Mobile apps is an SDK on top of that. It comes in various flavors. I'm going to be using the ASP.NET version today. It also comes in a Node variety. For those of you, if you're familiar with the Xamarin Evolve app, we showed off Easy Tables during the keynote. That was built with the Node backend. And that allows you to view your tables online. The ASP.NET is strongly typed. Doesn't allow you to get that, but it's still an excellent backend. On the client SDKs, we support all the major platforms. So if you're a native developer as well as a Xamarin developer, we've got native APIs for Android, iOS, Windows. And we also delve into the Cordova. And if you're developing a companion web application, we've got a JavaScript SDK as well. So with that, that's the slides. We're very demo heavy today. I am going to get out of that and get into the dashboard. Now, I've already created my own Azure account. You can try it for free if you haven't got one already. If you have an MSDN subscription so that you can get Visual Studio benefits, you have Azure credits that you can use. You just need to sign up for them. Creating a service is pretty easy. We've got, I'm just hiding the menu here, but we've got a big, nice, new button at the top. So that's the starting point. I'm going to create a new service. I'm going to go into web and mobile. There's a mobile app right here. And I'm going to call it, very originally, Xamarin Evolve Demo. And it's going to check that live for me just to make sure that I have it. No one else has taken it, because the namespace is azurewebsites.net, and that's shared across everybody. Now, I can either create a resource group, or I can use an existing one. One of the neat things about the service is that you can group resources together into resource groups, and then you can estimate spend on the resource group level. So if you have a service, you can plug everything together. From a development point of view, I like this because when I'm finished with a resource, I want to delete it, but I also want to delete all the dependent resources as well. So deleting a resource group also deletes all the dependent resources. I've actually got one for Xamarin Evolve already, if it will actually pick it. There we go. The other thing that people get concerned with was, well, how much is it going to cost? So we have an app service plan that you pick right when you create it. You can also change the app service plan as you go along. So for example, during development, you might not want so much resources. But as you go live, you want to scale up the service to a more premium service. So I'm going to create a new one. And I'm just going to call it Xamarin Evolve Demo Stuff. That seems to work. I get to pick where I want to run it. So if you're in another country, pick the place that's closest to you, or rather, pick the place that's closest to your customers. We're in the eastern US, so I'm going to put it there. I can also pick a pricing tier. Now I've got the location set, it will actually give me the prices, once it comes up, the prices of the individual pieces. So these aren't all of them. I can view more, and you can see that you can get various performance levels. If you're interested in doing automatic scaling, so let's say you've got your mobile site and you want to be able to scale up to millions of users, you might not want to pay for millions of users up front. You might want to wait until you get there. So you can create rules that allows you to add additional resources as the load goes up. So that's automatic scaling. If you go down to the basic levels, you can see you can scale up to 3 instances, but it's a manual scale. That means that you get a slider, and you manually go, well, I need another instance now, so let me do that. On the bottom, I don't recommend these. There's a free and there's a shared tier. These are really CPU limited. Most people, you know, if you're doing a quick app, just to test out a proof of concept, they're great. They don't cost anything. But if you want to get onto a real application and start using it or sharing it with colleagues, you definitely want to avoid these. You'll get a bad experience. So for this one, I'm going to pick a basic. So I get a custom domain. I get 10 gigs of storage. I get regular stuff. And I can save that out. I want to pin this to the dashboard so I can find it easily later. Most Azure subscriptions that I see, they have hundreds of resources. Finding the specific one that you're working on is generally difficult. So we'll pin that to the dashboard, and it will start going there. So whilst that's going, I'm going to start developing the back end. The first question I have is, Mike.
Yes.
What do you need?
Well, we're going to be building an agile Scrum executive style to-do list app. So we just need text and a bool value. We're keeping it nice and simple today. So if you could make that happen, that'd be great.
Awesome. Do you need offline sync?
Well, conference Wi-Fi is known to be rock solid. So let's just be safe and let's add that.
OK. So offline sync is it's great for situations where the network might not be as speedy as you want it to be, where you're going in and out of connectivity range. It can detect those and really give you an online performance experience. A lot of people implement offline sync even when they don't need it for that performance. Instead of going against a remote resource, which is guaranteed to be delayed, you're going to go against a local database. And then you're going to synchronize that database to the remote end. So we'll put in some offline sync as well. I've already prepared the project. Now, the way I did this, just to save some time, is I went into new project, and I created an ASP.NET web application. I've got the Azure SDK involved on this. No, I'm not going to do that. And right here in the templates that you have once you've installed the Azure SDK is an Azure mobile app. When you new that out, you get you get the one I just had open. There we go. Now, there are three bits that you need in order to implement a table. The first one is the model. Now, in the back end, it's not called a model. It's called a data transfer object, or DTO. And the difference between a model and a DTO is the entity data that you need to derive from. That adds five additional fields. Number one is an ID. Now, if you've done any work in a database, most normally the ID is an auto-incrementing integer. That does not work in mobile. You need to have a globally unique identifier for every single record. So we do that for you. Now, the reason is if I have a record here, and I'm offline, and Mike has a record that he's creating, and he's offline, we might actually create the same record when we go online. It's a race condition. So if we generate a globally unique ID, we don't conflict anymore. Aside from the ID, that's very important, we have a created date, we have an updated date, we have a deleted flag, and we have a version. Now, the updated date allows us to do incremental sync. So when you're pulling records down, you only pull the changes, you don't pull the entire database. The version allows us to do conflict resolution. So we can say this version of this record changed, and we know which version we've got. The created date is for our primary key. And finally, the deleted, we're going to deal with that now. We have a database context. I'm just going to unpin that. There we go. And this is a standard entity framework thing. So you're going to need to do that. We need to add this DB set. That's our entity framework thing that says we're managing this table. The final thing is a controller. So here is my to-do item controller. And the only thing I have to do here is enable that offline sync. Now, the thing that I'm enabling here is soft delete. Now, soft delete is a particular problem in offline sync scenarios. If I delete a record and it deletes on the database, and Mike's device downloads that is syncing to that same database, how does he know that that record is gone? So rather than deleting the records, we mark them as deleted, and that's known as soft delete. So if you're doing an offline sync version, you definitely need to include that. So switching back to the portal, now I've got my project set. I've created the project. I've created the all the components there. What I now need to do is hook up a database. Now, we've created some quick start facilities that give you a starter project for both the back end and the front end. Eventually. Come on.
Wi-Fi.
Yeah, yeah. Totally there. We have projects for every single platform. So that's Xamarin Forms, iOS, Android, UWP, Windows Phone 8.1, Apache Cordova, Swift, Objective-C, Java. So there's more coming all the time. So I'm going to take the Xamarin Forms one. And I'm going to click on this, complete the piece. I need to add a database on the back end. Now, this will actually, I've actually created one earlier. So you do get a list of your existing databases that you can use. You can also connect your own. If you have a data source back on an on-premise database, there's facilities such as VPNs, ExpressRoute, and hybrid connections that allow you to access that that database back on your on-premise through those facilities. So I've got the Xamarin Evolve DB here. If I wanted to create one, I could create one right from that interface as well. Now, aside from the database connection, I actually need to know how to connect to it. So I need to put in the username and password. Now, I don't know about you, but I never remember the right password. But fortunately, we do a quick check as you're typing here and make sure that it's right right there. So that's correct. I remembered it correctly. And now I'm going to just click on OK, and it's going to go away and deploy that database for me. While that is happening, I can get back over here to my project, and I can actually deploy it, because we've now got a website that we can actually deploy to. It doesn't have any code yet. To do that, there are a couple of ways. The first way is the way that I'm going to show you today that allows a developer that's working in Visual Studio to publish. The second way is to set up continuous deployment. And that's great for production sites. So the general concept is, I mentioned staging slots before, is you have your production site, and you create a staging slot. Now, you can do that very easily in the portal. I'm just going to go back to the settings, all the way back. Is down in here, we have deployment slots. And I can create a deployment slot called staging. And I can hook that up to my source code control. So something like Visual Studio Team Services, or GitHub, or Bitbucket, or whatever you use. We can even create our own Git repository for that. And I can allow the developer to push to that. Now, that doesn't affect my production site. It creates a live online version of the code that's being developed running against either a test database that I've set up or the production database. Then I can do all my testing on that. When I'm ready to deploy, I might not want to put that right into production, because even though we've done some testing, it's still developer testing, QA testing. There's no live traffic. I can actually set up a rule that says maybe send 10% of the production traffic to that staging slot. And I can watch it. And then when I'm ready, I do a staging slot swap, which is a button. You can see it grayed out here because I don't have any slots. You can do a swap, and that staging site now becomes the production site, but it inherits all of the settings that we've set up for production. So things like the scaling rules, the database connection, that sort of thing, you can actually specify as a slot. So now, again, we go back to the typical DevOps thing. I'm continually deploying all the time. As soon as my source code tree gets updated and someone pushes to that branch, it gets updated. It updates the site for me, redeploys, and I can test against that again. Back to the version we're going to be doing, though. We're going to be doing a straight publish. This can be done right from the Visual Studio console. The advantage of doing this is really around migrations. So ASP.NET and Entity Framework, they do not manage the database for you. You have to set up migrations. And that's a one database version to another database version. So when you update the schema, you have to do that. I'm going to go in. I'm going to sign in with my account. And it's going to refresh, and it's going to find my subscription. I've got an MSDN subscription. And here's my Xamarin Evolve service. Now, I've already set this one up for Mike earlier because the demo gods are not always kind. So I'm going to set up the one that I just created. And it tells me all the pieces that I need. I can click on validate. And it's actually pulled down that publishing profile directly from Azure, so you don't need to worry about it. So it's valid. It's got the green tick. I can click on next. And this is where we actually have some options. Now, if you're doing a wholesale upgrade, then you probably want to remove the additional files. You may even want to pre-compile during publishing. That speeds up the deployment process and the refresh process by doing the build on your machine rather than on Azure. The other piece that's down here, and I don't have any, so it's grayed out. We actually detect that, is those entity framework code first migrations. If there are any, that will not be grayed out, and I will be able to execute that. So that's how you would do the EF migrations. So now I can just publish, and it will go off, and it will do the build for me, and it will publish. And then it will refresh, and I'll get a nice view of the actual service. I'm just going to do a quick check whilst Mike's getting set up there with Postman, which is one of my favorite tools to actually go. So I can actually hop onto Xamarin Evolve demo.azurewebsites.net. All the tables end up under tables. And I'm just going to do a get of the to-do item. There's one additional wrinkle, which is the Zoomo API version needs to be set to 2.0.0. That tells us that you're using a client SDK and you know what you're doing. If you don't put that in, we assume you don't know what you're doing. And we say, go away and learn how to do this. So there's one record in it. Send birthday card to the queen.
Yeah, it was her birthday last week.
And you didn't do this already?
I think I've done it. It's completed.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Well done. So we know that this service is now working. And I can pass this off now to Mike, who's going to actually do the work. So let's get down to back to the site.
Switch over to the Mac. That'd be lovely. So again, if we could switch over to the Mac, that'd be great. Thank you. Perfect. So I'm going to jump into Xamarin Studio. You've seen Visual Studio. Who here is using Visual Studio as their day-to-day IDE? Wow. And Xamarin Studio? So it's actually about 50-50. It's not bad. So we thought we would split it about the same, so 50-50. So let's jump straight into Xamarin Studio. Hopefully you can all see this. This is a Xamarin Forms project. I could have built this with traditional, but we wanted to share as much code as possible, and we wanted to focus on Azure. So this is almost, I think it's about 97% code reuse when we analyze it as a whole. There's one line that's unique to Android, iOS, sorry, in order to get SQL initialized. So let's have a look at this. We've got our portable class library here, which is where our app is actually implemented. So it's got our views, our view models, and then we've got our services as well as our models, because that's what we call them on the client side. We've also then got our iOS and Android app, and I'll just drop into the app delegate to show you these couple of lines that are unique to iOS and Android. So with iOS and Android, we can share this line of code, which is just getting mobile service initialized and make sure that the linker doesn't go ahead and remove this library for us. Because sometimes a linker can be a bit aggressive, right? It wants to shrink the size of your final binary down as small as possible. So it's like, we don't need that, we don't need that. But actually, you probably do need it. So, but by this line of code, we just guarantee that the linker isn't going to pull that out. And then this line, 24, is unique to iOS. We don't have to use this line on Android. And I can show you that by dropping into the main activity. There you go. So we just have line 23 there, which is matched for iOS as well. And it would be the same for Windows Phone if I was building a UWP version. Now, if I had done this in Visual Studio and done File New Solutions, Xamarin Forms, and naturally I'd always pick Portable Class Library rather than shared code, because that's just horrible. It's a personal opinion, me and Miguel, we differ on that one. He's wrong. So if I did this in Visual Studio, I would actually have four projects within the solution. I'd have the iOS, Android, UWP, and then the Portable Class Library. But naturally, I don't have the Windows SDK installed on my Mac. That shouldn't shock anybody. So I want to talk to you about the packages that we're going to need to add to our application. So we want to go onto NuGet, and we're going to want to type in Azure Mobile SQLite. And you may be thinking, well, yeah, I need SQLite, but that surely shouldn't be the first package that I go and grab. Well, it's a quick tip for you. If we look at what SQLite depends on, or the Azure SQLite depends on, it depends on this Microsoft.Azure.Mobile.Client, which is what we really need. So we just go ahead and we grab that. We tick it, and then we go ahead and add the package. Now, we're going to want to add that package to every platform project. So we put it in our Portable Class Library. We then go ahead and add it for our iOS project, and then again for our Android, and then once finally for UWP. Now, a quick tip for you. Whilst you're in here, you're probably going to want to go and grab the connectivity plugin. Is everyone here using Xamarin plugins? So a few of you. A couple of you aren't. Bit of advice, go and check them out. They were created by James Montemagno and also the community as well. But this particular one is James's, and it's lovely. So I'm going to type in plugin.connectivity. Let's search in NuGet. And this works exactly the same if I was in Visual Studio. So there's nothing unique for the fact I'm working on the Mac. In fact, I can just take this solution and go and open it in Visual Studio to add the Windows side of things if I want. And we'd want to add this connectivity plugin. And the reason for that is when I'm syncing my data, once I've plugged in Azure, I don't want to try and force a sync when I'm not connected to the internet. I want to be able to check that the URL, the endpoint that Adrian's created for me, is reachable. Now, a lot of people, when they're doing that is reachable, they'll just say, hey, let's see if Google's reachable. Because 9 times out of 10, Google is always online. If that's gone, if you're getting no results from Google, it's probably you, right? Well, what I tend to do is I tend to just check if the endpoint that we're trying to hit is reachable, because then it doesn't matter if my device is offline or if for some reason someone's broken the back end. And I'm always breaking back ends. So it's always a good check.
Noticed.
Yeah, sorry. So we'd go ahead and we would add that to the project. And I want to show you the data model. So this is the data model that we could actually share with the back end. So with the Xamarin Evolve app, I think we're getting around 26% code reuse between front end and back end, which is pretty good. And most of that is through things like our data models. So it's really easy to share that type of code. The controllers, not so much, but models, pretty easy. And we're inheriting here from entity data. Now, naturally, this version of this class is not the entity data class that you guys are using.
It's actually very, very, very similar.
Yeah, but it's not come from entity framework.
It's not come from entity framework, no, but the entity data doesn't either. It comes from mobile services.
Very good point. So the reason for this is we need those attributes, or we need those properties within this class in order for that offline sync to work. And we need it to have an ID. So the easiest way is to create this class and just use it everywhere. So we always want to inherit from there.
Now, there is one difference between the entity data that is on the client and the entity data that is on the server. The server needs to understand soft delete. So it has a deleted field. The entity data that is on the client,
I don't care about that.
We don't care, because when we see soft delete true, the client will actually delete the record rather than just marking it as deleted. So the difference between this client version and the server version is that the client version doesn't have the deleted field.
Perfect. So I didn't want to wait for Adrian to deploy the back end before I could get started with the UI, because I didn't want you guys to see me writing XAML and my view models, because that's pretty boring. So I went ahead and created some mock data. And we'll launch this onto iOS so that you can see it. Here we go. So get my hair cut. Well, I got that done yesterday, so we can check that off. And finish up presentation. Well, I think we finished the slides, didn't we?
Yeah, we're
pretty confident.
Backstage.
Yeah, last minute, as always. And there we go, it's gone. But because this is mock data, I can just go ahead and quit the app, relaunch it. And those changes won't have persisted. So I'll show you the class that we're using to create this mock data. We'll drop into services. And first of all, you're going to see I have this iService. And the iService is defining what I want to do. So it's the interface with all the methods that I'm going to want to have in my Azure implementation and my mock service implementation. So I need to get things initialized. I want to be able to get all of the to-do items. I want to be able to add some to-do items, update, delete, and then sync. So it's basic CRUD functionality. Well, I go ahead and I implement this service as a mock class. So within here, the most interesting thing is probably that we're getting a list back of to-do items, which matches what we get within the UI. So I don't have to wait for that backend to be ready before I can start testing how my UI would look. I can test pull to refresh. And it's just calling into this class. When I want to add new items, I just go ahead and pass in the text and the bool value, and then boom. We new up a new to-do item, and we add it to the list. So this is a great way to not be blocked by the backend guys fiddling around and making changes, and so that you can just get on and build the mobile front end. And we've used this quite a lot when we build our Xamarin apps. The Evolve app uses it, and the My Driving app that we used as well. So it's a great approach to building applications without having to wait.
I'm also going to say here, it's a great tool for the back-end developer and the front-end developer. You can be testing your code with unit tests against the mock data and have an expectation of the results being valid. I can test on the back-end by ensuring that the interface is constant against the back-end versus the mocked data by using the same data model. So
yeah, so if you're not using mock data, bit of advice, get on it. It's wonderful. Now, I'm using a service locator to make this even easier for me. So you can see I've got this value up here saying use mock data equals true. And I'm going to say, actually, we want that to be false now. And if it's false, we're going to say service locator instant.add, and then it's the type iService and Azure service. Boom. And now when I run this, it's going to new up that Azure service, and we can start communicating with the back end. So let's go ahead and have a look at the code for the Azure service. And just like before, I've stubbed out all the methods that we need to implement from iService. And I've already got all my using set up so that we don't have to worry about that. And I've put in some helpful to-dos so that I don't get lost. But also, I'm going to publish this a little later on so that you can download it from my GitHub, and you can go ahead and do this if you want as well. So it's a nice little gift from me to you. So first things first, we need to initialize and get ready to use the Azure backend. So I've got some snippets, because no one wants to see this being typed. Boom. And we're going to initialize this mobile service client. Now, the mobile service client allows us to get our tables, get the current user, and also deal with things like logging in. So it's a pretty important part of the SDK. If you don't have this, none of it's going to work. Now, to add that offline synchronization, we need to store that in a database somewhere. We need to take that data and put it somewhere. So we can set up the SQL side of things by defining the name of our SQL database. And when we're deployed on Android or iOS or UWP, we can dig into the app and literally drag that SQL database and go and view it in any SQLite viewer. So there's nothing special about this. This is just a SQLite database that's standard. But we don't have to worry about the implementation details as .NET developers. We just use the beautiful SDKs that Microsoft shipped to us, and it just works. So once we've done that, we're going to define our table. And this is my favorite bit. I just pass in an object. I'm like, this is my model. I want to save it in a table, just make it work. And it does. I don't have to worry about designing it and, you know, dealing with designing all the tables and all the attributes and things. I just create my C# model, and boom, it's all done for me. It's beautiful. So once we've done this initial setup, the most important part after that is the sync. Because this is the bit that we're going to call. When we add an item to this table, we're going to want to sync that data back to the database. When we pull to refresh, we want to be syncing, so we want to be pulling that data down when we update. So literally every CRUD operation, we want to be calling this sync method. Now, as I mentioned before, we don't want to be calling this if we don't have internet connectivity. So let's just write some code. We'll do var connected equals await, because we're not animals. We do async.
We do async.
And we're going to use that plugin from James Montemagno. And you're going to see how easy this is. Don't you just love IntelliSense?
It's a dot-do
language.
Tap, 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 tap.
It tells you what you can do, and you do it. Now, if I use an IDE and it doesn't tell me what I can do, I go to lunch. So we're going to say is reachable. And this is what I mentioned earlier. Most people would be like, well, you know, if Bing or Google is offline, then we're definitely going to be offline, right? But I always think it's actually better to test if your backend is online, because I may have crashed it. I probably did. So we'll say if connected equals false, then we'll just return. So we're not going to start the sync process. And we're not going to show any errors, because no one, you know, they know they're not on the internet. They've been trying to read the news or surf Reddit. And then they've gone and added a to-do item. They already know that this isn't working.
It's so, the internet.
Yeah, they've already moaned about it. So we don't need to say, hey, you don't have internet. We're just going to silently fail, but keep that data in the SQL database ready to sync back when we do have connectivity. So let's go ahead and assume that we have connectivity now. Ooh. Boom, there we go. And you'll notice that we're pushing first, and then we're pulling. So we're going to push all of our changes up. And once they're up there, we'll then want to pull down any changes that we don't have on our device.
I'm going to make a comment here. The pull async, you can actually call without anything. So you can just say push, pull. If you do that, and it's very tempting to do, because there's that thing that's in the IntelliSense that says, that's the first match that says, I can take no arguments whatsoever.
Yep.
You're going to be downloading the entire database table every single time. You put these two arguments in there. First is the name of the query, and that's stored locally as in the database to say this is the query, and then the actual query that's being executed. You'll turn that into incremental sync, and then it will only download the records that have changed since the last time you synced. So if you've got large databases, large tables, and you're downloading a lot of records, that we've got some clients that literally download millions of records, you can do the first sync on your local Wi-Fi, and then when you're out and about, it will only download the changed records.
Yeah, so it makes it much more performant. And nobody wants to wait around for their data to download, especially if you put up a HUD and it's just going to sit there going loading, 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 and then your app's going to go into background while they load up Reddit or whatever other thing that they use to kill time. But you'll notice this to-do table and the dot pull async. If we want to update an item, we'll come in here. In fact, we'll do insert first. We can just go await to-do table update async. And then we'll just pass
insert.
yep. Perfect. Got it wrong. And the API is super, super easy. You know, this CRUD stuff isn't complex, but it just works. And it's a testament to your developers building this SDK, because it makes it so easy to add this offline capability. You really don't have to worry about it. And having tried to do this myself, I used another service that begins with P that you guys now support quite well. I tried to implement offline sync, and you know, when I save an item on my iPad, I want it on my iPhone or on my Android device, and I could get it to sync, but then when I updated it over here, it was really difficult to get it to update over there. I was creating tables for days, and the logic with merging it was horrible. Whereas this just works with a couple of lines of code. So I love it. And here we're going to do update. Boom. And then we'll do, last one we'll do is a snippet. Boom. So you get an idea for how this works. Very, very simple API. And this whole class is 121 lines of code. And we've got a fair few comments in there to guide you through the steps and explain what everything's doing. So we could bring this down to less than 100 lines of code. Actually, before I put the comments in there, it sat at 98 lines, even with the usings. So it's pretty compact for the functionality that you're getting. So now that we've done that, let's just double check that we're not using mock data. Let's deploy to iOS. Whilst we're doing that, I've already deployed to Android a version of this app. So I can go ahead and click New. And I say charge my Apple Watch. Now, really, for version 2 of this app, we should make that a recurring feature, because I'm always charging this bad boy. Charge Apple Watch. Save. And that's saved. We can come back, and we can already see it in our app here. But let's load up Postman. And boom, we've got charged Apple Watch ready to go. Got this strange item here. Let's go ahead and delete that. I don't know where that's come from. You can see we've got this synchronization between both devices. Now, this is just working in my computer on the simulators, but I could be halfway around the world and be syncing back with colleagues. It doesn't matter how far away you are or what devices you're using, this all just works, and it really does feel like magic. So let's add something on the iPhone. What should we do? Finish presentation. As we're getting there, we can mark that as complete later. And there we go, we've saved. We go back, pull to refresh, there we go. Boom, finished presentation. So that's all it takes. As I say, 98 lines of code, and we're now doing offline sync across both devices. I can disconnect from the internet, start adding stuff again. And when I reconnect, it's going to push it up to Azure. It's going to be available to the websites and any other client that's connected. So it really is magic. So we have a little bit of time left. I'm going to talk a little bit about why I love Azure. Because if anyone listens to the podcast, you'll know that in, I think it was July, I was starting an application that needed a back-end infrastructure. And I'm a front-end guy. I'm not a huge fan of having to jump into the back end. It's not where I feel at home. I feel most at home writing mobile applications or desktop applications. And I went through literally every provider to try and find somewhere where I felt at home. And over the last 6 months, Azure has felt like home to me. And I want to talk about why. And it's the ecosystem that surrounds Azure. So App Service is amazing for great SDKs, this offline sync that helps with performant applications. It's really easy to add authentication to our applications as well. We'll talk about that in a moment. And we have easy tables. Is anyone here using PaaS? No one? Well, although there's a couple of you waving at the back. Well, easy tables is just as easy as PaaS was. But it's still built on App Service.
Now, if you are looking at PaaS and going like, wow, April 28th.
Yeah, the deadline.
I have to get off. Well, we've created a gallery package for you. So we've taken what PaaS did, the PaaS open server, and we've said, Azure has some great services. It has push notifications, cross-platform push notifications for with notification hubs. It has scalable storage with Azure Storage. It has a NoSQL backend with DocumentDB.
Yep.
And it has scalable hosting with App Service. Why don't we throw those together, put them in a blender, put a couple of developers on it to actually round that out. It was more than a couple at the end. And make our NoSQL, which comes with a lot of SLAs, performance guarantees, around latency and other things that NoSQL people really care about. And let's put that as a gallery package. So now, just like I created a app service, a mobile app, I just went into new and said mobile app. And you can actually go new and start typing in the search box PaaS. And there's PaaS with Azure Managed Services. And that will deploy the entire thing for you in a way that you can actually migrate your MongoDB from the PaaS service to the Azure service.
So my recommendation is you should do that if you have an existing PaaS infrastructure. If you're starting from new,
if you're starting from new
and you want the ease of PaaS, then you'll probably want to be using EasyTable. Now, the other reason that I love App Service is the scalability. So I mentioned I'm not a back-end guy, and let's say my app gets really popular, and overnight I've got 2-3 million people using it, and I was on B1. That's going to be a problem. I'm going to need to scale out, right? I'm going to need to add some more servers or maybe bump up a few tiers. It's really easy to do with Azure. I can just pop into the portal, and I can say, yeah, I need some more instances of this app service, please. And it's going to deal with the provisioning process for me. Now, I can even say, you know, I'm going on holiday in 2 weeks. What if my app gets really popular whilst I'm on holiday? I'm going to be sat by a pool. I'm not going to have my laptop available to sign in and start moving sliders. But I can set up rules. I could use my phone, but I could set up rules and automate it. So when I'm at 90% capacity, we can just fire up some new instances, and we're good to go. Mobile is fickle, so when it stops being popular, we can just turn those off automatically based on rules again. So I don't have to manage the scaling of this infrastructure. It just works, which I love. And as well, as I mentioned, the services around Azure is a bit that I love. So I try to implement search within my mobile app, and search is a really difficult problem to get right. And at first, I just had my table controller, and I was doing a link query. So I was like, if the string that contains this string, that you know, I want to return it. And that gets you only so far. But how do you deal with spelling mistakes?
What, you mean like spelling Xamarin with a Z?
Yeah, and off by one. It's just going to show no results. And it's like, well, that's not a great user experience. And I was like, well, I could use machine learning, and I could take, you know, well, they typed in Xamarin incorrectly, and now they typed it in within 30 seconds correctly. So we can probably assume that that was a similar search term. They were off by one, so why don't we suggest that? And I'm storing that in a table, and then I'm using machine learning to try and predict spelling mistakes. And I was like, this is getting mad. I was reading papers by PhD students on how to optimize it. I was like, I don't want to be writing this. I just want search to work. And I was actually Googling for Azure App Service search to try and find a tutorial for someone else that had fixed it. And actually, Azure Search came up. And much like App Service, amazing .NET SDKs, super easy to scale, and it integrates with my SQL DB. So I've already got my data source ready to go. It's got all of my objects in there. Well, I can point Azure Search at it and say, just go and crawl this. And now I get suggestions, proximity search, and term boosting without having to do anything. So when someone misspells something, we can catch it with the suggestions. You know, they start typing in Xamarin with the Z, or they probably get to the AMA, and we can pull up the suggestion of X instead, just like when you're using Bing or Google. So super, super easy. I think it's about 45 lines of code to get everything set up. And I manage the index myself, so adding and removing and updating items in the index rather than using the crawling, but definitely an option if you want it. And then on top of that, cognitive services. So this was announced at Build only a few weeks ago. To me, well, first of all, I don't have a PhD in anything, right? And I want to use machine learning. And I kind of feel if you don't have a PhD, in statistics or mathematics, you can only go so far with machine learning before you're going to have to pay someone to come in and help you. And I want to have access to all these great vision APIs and speech and language APIs without having to worry about the underlying implementation. And with cognitive services, we get that. So I can take a photo of you, and I can say, cognitive services, what is this? And it's going to say,
Very distorted.
Very distorted, yes. Well, I'll post that later. It will say it's a guy with glasses on, and we're 94% sure that he's smiling at you right now. Keep smiling. I can take a photo of a table, and it will tell me that it's a table. And this is great. So within the beer tracking app that I'm building, I'm taking a photo of a, and whenever you snap a photo of the beer, I'm actually confirming, is this a beer, or are they taking a picture of a dog and trying to store it in my server? If it comes back with anything less than 50% chance that it's a beer, I'm not going to store it. Speech APIs, my colleague Pierce, who's done a mini hack out in the mini hack area with the coffee machines, he's got it that he can pull out his phone and he can say, make me a cup of coffee. And it sends that command up to IoT Hub, and it starts to brew in the office. And this is just a couple of lines of code. And can you imagine trying to write the code to do vision and speech analysts? And the data that you need, and then to annotate it and to teach the machines and make it all work. We don't have to worry about that. It's just a RESTful API that just works. A couple of lines of code, and you've got it integrated in your app.
The nice thing is Azure has just about 200 of those.
Yeah.
Not the cognitive services.
But all the different little services.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about it. You go into the marketplace and you want to send emails, so you just type in emails and there's a long list of third-party companies and resources that you can just plug into. A couple of lines of code and you're building on the shoulders of giants. You know, it's amazing. Yeah. So I want to talk very quickly about auth, because we didn't do any authentication in this app. If you guys know the endpoint that we're using, you could have ruined the demo if you wanted to. So authentication is pretty important. So let's quickly talk about that. You get a couple of authentication options with app service. You can use Google, Facebook, Twitter, Microsoft, or Active Directory. Now, you can also roll your own if you want to. In fact, we're all using the Xamarin Evolve app, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so everyone's using it. And you had to sign in. Well, that's using our own authentication system. So we've got a custom authentication within our app service that then ties into our standard website. I think it was about 2 or 3 classes. We're going to be open sourcing that very soon, so you can check it out. But it was super easy. But even that's complex compared to the minimum amount that you need to do to add authentication. One line of code. It's wonderful. So this is server-side authentication. And we suggest this is a good way to get started, but it's not great for production apps.
Now, if I just flip over onto the other side, the server side, if you want to protect an API with this authentication, it is similarly one line. It is an authorized decorator. We've taken care of all the rest of it for you.
Yeah, so you can lock down those tables that you don't want people having access to.
One line on the client, one line on the server.
It's lovely. So with this approach, with the server side, when you hit login and you say you want to log in with Microsoft or let's say Facebook, you get the web view pop up. We've probably all seen this. And then you type in your details and it says, do you want to authorize this app to use your Facebook credentials? And you say, yes, please. And then the web view pops away. Well, it's not the best user experience,
in my
opinion. You have
to kind of type in.
Yeah, you have to remember your password. And I use 1Password, so I then have to launch another app and then type in my master password because I haven't opened it in ages. And then I copy and paste it back in. And yeah, it's pretty horrible. So suggestion is to use client-side authentication. So with this approach, you would hit sign in with Facebook, and it's going to launch the Facebook application, which you're already logged into. And it's going to say, you know, the to-do list app would like to authenticate and get this information about you. Are you happy with that? And you go, yep, I'm happy with that. Boom. And then it's going to launch you straight back into your mobile application. So it's actually a much more seamless way to do authentication in terms of the user experience.
Also, from just a practicality point of view, Facebook and Twitter and all these guys, they are continually adding features to their SDK.
Yep.
We give you, with the server-side login, we give you username and password and whatever claims come along for the ride, like email address. You can deal with that sort of thing. But in essence, it's very restricted. With the client-side SDK, you can use all of the API with the client SDK that comes along. So Facebook, you want to post a message to your friends. You can actually do that from within your app because you are authenticated with the official SDK.
Yeah, it gives you a lot more flexibility. And naturally, we have the SDKs on a component store, so you can just go onto our component store or go onto NuGet and grab these. So it's really not that complicated to do, and it makes it, you know, much easier to extend, as you mentioned, in terms of the client side. But it's much nicer. Go with this approach, or users will love you for it. So who here is an MSDN subscriber? Almost everyone. Are you all using your Azure credits? Is anyone here not using them? A couple of you.
You are leaving, I think it's $150 a month, thereabouts, on the table, because that is what Azure gives you every single month in order to use Azure.
Yeah, no credit card required. You can just spin up new instances and eat into those credits. And it's not costing you any money. So there's no reason not to be having a play with this. You might not have an app today that requires backend. But as I said, if you've built that ASP.NET application before, you're already an expert at this. So why not fire up Azure and have a play?
Yeah.
It's a no-brainer. So I've been Mike James, developer evangelist. I've written a couple of apps with my colleagues, My Driving, which you can go and download. It's a pretty great app that we built for Build. It's got an Azure backend. It's for iOS, Android, UWP.
We've got Beer Drinking, which is a beer tracking app. If anyone's used Untappd, think of it like that. But instead of being Cordova and AWS, it's Xamarin and Azure. So it's native. Gotta love it. And then we've got My Step Counter, which is a step counting app in the App Store. 40,000 downloads, and I've never marketed it. Love it. You can go and read my blog at mikecodes.net.
Awesome. I'm Adrian Hall. I'm one of the senior members of Azure Mobile. I've been around for a long time. I've done a lot of things. So my major thing at the moment is my blog. I am currently blogging 30 days of Zoomer, which takes you, I think I'm on day 13, something like that.
Yeah.
But it takes you from the very basic stuff that we've done here. That's probably the first day. And it takes you all the way through authentication, push notifications, and all the things you can do with table controllers across both the Node and the ASP.NET environment. So check that out if you're getting into this stuff. It'll help you a lot.
Yeah, and I've seen some of the content that you've got coming in the pipeline, and it really is full of nuggets of information. I love it. So you can download the project probably in around 20, 30 minutes, depending on how busy I am once I walk out that front door. From mikecodes.net on GitHub. As I say, you can check out my personal blog at mikecodes.net. You can also find me on Twitter if anyone can take a guess at what that name might be, mikecodes.net. You've got a great blog, and then we've also got content on the Azure GitHub.
So one of the neat things is Microsoft's on an open source kick at the moment.
Yeah?
All of our SDKs for Azure Mobile Apps are available as open source. So we put the Xamarin.net repo, but there's also ones for the servers and all the other clients as well. We accept pull requests. We accept issues. We also try to track Stack Overflow, Twitter. We are at Azure Mobile. So however you want to get hold of us, please do. And I've brought some of my team along as well. They're manning the app service booth. So those guys are the actual developers. So if you want to go talk to them, bring your thorny problems. They'll scratch their heads a while and help you out.
Awesome. Well, thanks, everyone. And we'll be floating around outside if you have any questions. So come and find us.
Awesome.
Yeah, good work.